Translation number 16730, F. Harrison, Reel 4.
Mr. Harrison, Reel 4. We were discussing the mortars, Mr. Harrison, which you had just joined. How many was in a mortar team?
A mortar team, there'll be four plus an NCO. That was the actual team. There was one, he was the number one. The chap that puts the bomb down, he was number two, then there's the other one is handing the shells, and the four was looking after the shells, but was further back. He was carrying them, and that was all. It was just the four. Then you had an NCO in charge. He would do all the directing, range or otherwise.
Presumably there was a drill to setting it up and firing it.
Oh, yes.
Can you take me through the drill?
Oh, yes. They used to go for mortar drilling. I used to stand. Right. You had your base plate, big base. I don't know the way of saying the base plate. The base plate would be down, then your battle, then your tripod. So I would go and stick an aiming point out. It was just like a stick with a white arrow on, just a... I says, that's your target.
And how far out might that be?
Oh, just for practice, maybe just 20, 30 yards. Now I would just shout, right, mount mortar. He would dash with his base plate, and he would just line the centre of his base plate with like a ridge down with his target, and he would just plonk that down. At that time, number two is running up with his barrel, comes round there, slots that into the base. And number three would come round with his tripod, and have all the weight goes over the barrel, and he just swings it round. This big brass couple comes over the barrel, and he stamps that down's in. And the other lads just carry the shells up. And they all just aim, he knows what to do, so when he gets it all, he's elevating, and then he's adjusting there, and he's sliding backwards and forwards on there. But it was, once they got there, it was marvellous how fast they could be.
I was going to ask you, how long might that take?
Ooh, they'd be all ready for fighting inside a minute. Oh, great. Once they got there, they were real fast. I mean, the others were competitions. And I was told that from Tynemouth, the Purvis was, Teddy Purvis, red hot. And he was. I had a good lad with me. I mean, he was getting near me. I mean, oh, that's long since I saw him at one of the football matches in Newcastle. That's what goes. If I was saying, I'm like getting a bit of talk, it would come back to us. But they're all good mortar teams in the mortar balloon.
So, as last corporal, you would be in charge of one team?
Yeah.
Well, was that what other duties did you have other than, of course, having your team on?
Well, we used to go marches, and we used to still do drill parades and all sorts. You know, but that was our objective, was being efficient at that mortar.
Did you still have guard duties to perform?
Oh yes, all of us to do. And in the meantime, there I was sent to Catterick. And I was up there for 14 days. I was on a course, and it was like tactical training. You were training with, other units, and it was a tough course because you were working at 6. You had to be up at 6, and you'd do maybe two or three, the instructors would have you out on different things before you got your breakfast. And you had all your notes to make out. You used to go till 6 o'clock at night, and you had all your notes and all everything to make out. Because, I mean, you had to have some proof that the did anything when you went back to the battalion.
This was a mortar corps, was it?
Well, mortars was in it, but there was other sides of the infantry work, see, and it was hard work. Well, it got me a second stripe, that. When I came back, I was full corporal.
So you've been trained on basic infantry work there?
Yeah.
Another stage.
Yeah.
Were you being trained, in effect, to take responsibility for other men at the battalion, to train them? Were you coming out of that, in other words, as a kind of instructor?
I could have come back and I could have instructed them, which I mean, it's something you get other recruits in, you show them what to do. I couldn't have done it, a new squad coming in all together, and I was just more or less a rogue. I couldn't have done it then, like, you know what I mean. But I got used to all that, and it was a good platoon. Why, I mean, we finished with a big platoon, because we had three carriers, it was six carriers. Each section had two carriers, and we had a Bren gun apiece. And then I had five men and myself, and another five men, and another NCO. That was my section, I had two.
As a corporal?
No, that was when I was a sergeant. That was later on.
So ultimately the mortars became mobile?
They did, yes.
And were the carriers set up to
fire a mortar?
Fire the mortar?
Yes, next to the driver. That was reinforced, and it could take a mortar. There's some thrust when a shell goes off, like on the base plate, but they were reinforced for that. And we finished up with six carriers. And with six mortars.
So coming back then to your Lance Corporal duties.
Yeah.
They say your Lance Corporal's kind of put on by everyone in the army, is that
true? Oh, yeah. Everybody's, you know. You're not in a... You can give orders, but they just laugh at you somewhere, you know. I mean, whole soldiers, like, you get a whole soldier to win. But no badness intended at all. They would just smile, but, you know, forget about it, Frankie, you know.
And then, of course, you've got all the ranks above you. It's passed down to the
region. Oh, yes. I mean, they'll drop onto you if anything goes wrong.
The extra pay, was there?
You got extra pay, yes.
Do you recall how much it was?
No. What was full corporal? I think I was on nearly 5 shilling a day then. I think it was about £5 a day at that time, I think.
You didn't ask what date that you became full corporal, which was immediately after your course.
That's where I'm beat. I'm beat for dates like that. But the course was in 1941. I think I've put it down on that sheet on there. I think it was about May time, something like that, because it was late in that on the morning when we were doing these parades. I think it was about May time.
You've moved from being one of the chaps in a platoon or a company, then you get your stripes, one, two in ultimately. Does that spoil relationships?
Not really. I mean, on parade, off parade, some of the lads, I mean, there was another lad that made a Lance Corporal or Corporal, we all went out together. On parade, you're on parade. I mean, they understood that. They were all right that way. It was a nice platoon. There were some good lads. There was.
Who commanded the mortar platoon at this time?
There was a Mr. Johnson. Mr. Clegg would be first. We finished up as adjutant of the battalion, I think. And Mr. Johnson, he was the man that organised this chart. He clever fella, and then And he used to get the awfulest name called Tojo. But he had glasses on, and he always seemed as though he was, you know, was a smushing fella, round-faced fella. And I liked him, because he's another one he could talk to, and he would talk to you. And it was all right. Mr. Clegg, he was nice. He was a nice fella. And he, I say, he moved on. He went to become adjutant. But I liked Mr. Johnson. I did. I liked him.
Did you say Martin McClay?
He was PSM then.
With the mortars, was
yes.
he?
Yes.
What was he like to serve under?
He was a sergeant major at that particular time. I mean, he was, you know, I'm the boss, you know, type of thing, like, you know. But he was all right. Then we started, we got extra, there was extra sergeants coming in that time, because the platoon was expanding. And as I say, they were just building the battalion up. So there was other blokes getting promoted, just the same. I think one time we finished up with about 4 or 5 sergeants in that platoon, till they got sorted out and everything. And they were all right. And we're at, we left Breed, and we went to a place called Rillington. That's near Moulton. It's not far from Moulton.
What time would this be?
No. I think it might have been about the February time. When we went back off the front, 41. Why, we're going back, moved back into Rillington, then we were doing some miles there, might have training there. We're still doing training, and, you know, lots of field work and all, you know, schemes and whatnot. And we were in Nissenhut there.
And what were they like to be in the middle of winter?
Well, we had a big stove in the middle. Like you, they were all right, but there were anybody sleeping near the doors. It was always cold for them. It was nearly too warm for them. It was near the fire. It was one of the, and you always got a bit of condensation in them, you know. It was, but they had double-decker beds.
Bunks?
It was all right. I mean, and we were there quite a while. And
were there any rumours that you were going to move? I mean, the army's rife with rumours.
Why? There's not much to talk about, really, but at Rillington, we got orders to move later on in the year. Well, we didn't know where we were going, what was happening. And I don't know, we went down in the train or trucks or what. We went down to Bury St. Edmunds and joined us. It was either the 42nd or the 44th Armoured Div. And I think that was about the back end of September time. And we were at a place called Culford Park, just outside of Bury, about 6 miles out of Bury St. Edmunds. And we wondered what on earth we were down there, where we were going. And we were under canvas. And it was cold in October. Boy, we were under canvas all the time. And I think we had one night out in Bury. And the wagons took us into Bury St. Edmunds, an awful place. I didn't like that. And
was that because of the population being a bit cooler?
I think the place itself, like, you know, and if you went into any shops, they weren't bothered about whether it's just that type of thing, whether they serve you or not. Like, you didn't feel comfortable. And we didn't know what we were doing there for, what we were going to do. I mean, we weren't down long, but only a few weeks. When we got called back to Rillington, then we started thinking there's something on the move here somewhere.
You hadn't got into training with tanks at all?
Not at all. No, what would it? The battalion must have got word that there was get prepared for something. So we went back to Rillington. wife, started training again, went on all training and everything else. And then just at the turn of the year, we went down to Cheltenham. And we were based at a little place called Sherdington, just 3 or 4 miles out of Cheltenham. Nice place. And Sergeant Major McLean, who was Sergeant Major of the company, headquarter company, Martin, where we were. And that's where it all started there. We really went to town there, like training, they even had a reinforcement company and everything.
You'd be pretty well, felt pretty well trained now, did you?
Yeah, or that battalion was in good shape. Yeah, I would say so. There was that uncertainty. You know, there was nobody could come out and say, look, you're going to Madagascar, or you're going to Bombay, or you're going to Norway. With some talk once, we nearly went to Norway very, very early, like, you know, but that all.
Did you receive any visits from high-ranking people in life?
Oh, yes, I would have. Were inspected by the King and Churchill.
Do you recall those?
That was on at Cheltenham. I said, well, there's something. I mean, they put words in your mouth when they do things like that, I think. I said, you're going to be off somewhere. When it was always Destination X. Even when we got to know we were definitely on the move, it was Destination X. And the first thing we knew, the transporter was departing. You know, I asked him, why are you off? He's having a clue. He said, we just had to get ready on the move. We didn't know a thing. All the transport went down to Newport, South Wales.
What date would this be?
Been April about 10th or 12th, something like that, about that time.
1942?
Yeah. Then the next thing we got to know, we all had a parade and everything else, get your gear all together, and we were parading, it was night time, when we marched onto Cheltenham Station, right at night time, with all our gear, everything had been packed and everything, all our arms, everything. And the train pulled in, still Destination X. We all got in, and away we went. And we were looking out the train and everything. I said, look, I want to lift 2 miles from this little place here, Ferry Hill Station. So I want to lift 2 miles from there. And we finished up in Glasgow. Right next to the new aircraft carrier, the Wasp, the Yankee.
Had you met any Americans at this time?
No.
You hadn't contacted any of them?
No, never at all. The Wasp, a nice carrier, like. And we boarded the Empress of Canada. That was the ship we were on. And it was a nice ship. It must have been a nice ship, but it was overcrowded.
What date was this?
This would be about the 19th. I think it was about the 19th. I think we sailed on the 19th. So this would be just a couple of days before that, maybe. And, there was lots of things going on. There were stores coming on, and there was, you know, your weapons and everything else. And still didn't know what a clue.
How did you feel about going abroad, even if you didn't know where you were going at this time? What was your own
feeling? Well, it was just uncertainty and anticipation, and, you know, and I just wondered, you couldn't, I mean, rumours fly about all over, going all over, and going to the Middle East and everything else, so.
Had you been given any tropical kits or anything of that nature, which
would have given you a clue? Not at that time, and so I think they knew, right, because when the convoy started to get prepared, it was the biggest convoy, by the way, that ever left Britain. the one we were in. And when we formed up, got out in the Atlantic and that, and we come back near Freetown, and the one that was take water on us, something like that.
Can we, before we get to that, can we talk about the ship itself?
Yeah.
You say it was crowded. What kind of accommodation did you have? Were you still a corporal?
At that particular time.
What was your accommodation?
Why, we had hammocks. But it was that, you know, it was that crowded and everything else. And, well, lots of lads, but they started going on top. Just taking old bedding upstairs and, you know, maybe after your tea at night. Because normally you'll be on guard. Because every stale door on that ship had a guard. And round the bow and the stern and everything of the ship, there was guards. Bring guns all over the place. They're all mounted. I think it was just stopping people getting bored and all. And we also run round the ship. When it was our turn, when it was the daylight turn, we also running round the ship. They just keep them fit. And then a bit of drill parade and everything else.
You were on mess decks, were you? Sleeping on mess decks?
Oh, I could sleep on there and all, under the mess tables, anyway. Any way I could get. It was absolutely crowded. There was one lad we all see laid for days underneath one of them mess tables. Never moved. There was the cooler, oh, seasick all the time. Oh, it's terrible. And the food used to be nice. Well, it used to come with a, there used to be maybe 12 on you on one table, 6 at each side, and somebody would go and collect for 12. Why, he would just, the end man would just sort it out, and he'd just pass them down, and oh, they did it, I don't know. There was never any grumbles, like, you know, about anybody getting any more than anybody else, so it was all right. And
Was it a wider variety of food than you would have got on land?
Oh, the bread, I mean, we know the weevils and all, there were a lot of weevils in here, but the bread, when it was baked on board ship, oh, that was beautiful. Oh, yeah, you know, I mean, you didn't mind bread or jam when the bread was nice, crusty loaf, like, you know, beautiful. You used to enjoy that.
And can you remember anything else of the food that you got? Ship's
No, when we got a little bit of fruit, a little bit of fruit now and again. And I think there was one night they opened the bar where you couldn't go and stand and get a drink or anything. What they used to do was take maybe, you'd have a clean Dixie and take a Dixie and say, well, I just put so much in there for 6 of us. You know, and then that was it. It was that younger stuff. Oh, yeah. And you used to dip your pot in and all that. They were on board, you know, up on deck. But they must have more known something, because there was some tropical gear came out before we got to where we had to go and all that.
So you had a certain amount of training with what space and time there was. How did they keep you occupied from the levies point of view? Did you have games? Or?
No, there was no room for games.
Boxing or anything of that nature?
No, nothing of that, not in ship. No, you were, apart from like running round the deck and, you know, and drilling and doing guards, you were fully occupied, looking after your weapons, everything, keep your weapons clean, everything, just anything to stop you getting bored.
Housey, you not, you know, that's a common game on ships. Were you playing that?
No, we never played. Never played anything like that. No.
Well, it got very boring then at the end of.
Oh, you know, we got rewatered and everything else at Freetown, and then we pulled out again.
Freetown, it was a port on the way out, as you know.
Yeah.
Do you recall being in Freetown? Did you get ashore?
No.
The boats and the lads coming out of the boat.
No, there was not there. No, there was none there. The sand was nearly this colour. That done there, that like red there. The sand, what you could see, it was a funny colour. But we weren't there long. Then they pushed off and got into Cape Town. It was a relief to get off there.
How were you received in Cape Town? And the South well, African
there
people?
Well, there was a few Aussies and everything in there, like, you know, the Australians and that is in there. But, we're all right. But we got a bit disillusioned when we got into Cape Town, because we went through the town itself to a camp about maybe 4 miles out. And, we thought we were going to ride free and easy, like in Cape Town and everything. Look, what? But it got tougher. The training got tougher. We were marching and drilling and everything. And they also let us out on a night. But the food there was wonderful. Oh, long tables, and heaps of black grapes and everything. You know, but it was smashing. But boy, it was a pleasure to get off that boat. It was. Oh, it was mile overcrowded. And it was a big ship. It was a Canada. It was what, about 28,000 ton, I think.
Did you said there were Australians there? Did you meet them at all?
No, we just. You know, I spoke to one or two now and again, but there was nothing. I mean, they reckon they torn the place apart once for me. Australians, they're a boisterous crowd, like, but we never saw anything. Never saw anything.
Didn't have
all.
Any problems with them in pubs or anything
no,
of that nature?
No, no, no. But, boy, what it roof there for four days, I think it was. And then we were back on there, then we didn't know. We still didn't know. We were supposed to go to Madagascar. Because the Free French was there, but somebody had gone there. I don't know which was the East Yorks or one of the Yorkshire regiments had gone there and quietened that lot down. Then there was Ceylon. We're going to go to Ceylon because frightened of the Japs with the bases at Ceylon. Anyway, we finished on our own.
How was it difficult coping with the heat on board ship? Is it coming right through the hottest part of the world?
Well. No, that part of it, when we left Britain, and we're coming into the warmer climate, you know, take your gear off, then anything you did on top deck, you were doing that for a while and put your gear on. You only did it a little bit at a time. The time you got the equator, you were getting browned a bit, and you were getting used to it. And nearly everything was, you know, you had to take care because it was if you got sunburned and you weren't fit for duty, that was self-inflicted. So you could get pay stopped for that, just like VD. If anybody got VD, that was self-inflicted and your pay was stopped, which they're entitled to do, and they did right to do it. But once you got climatized to the heat, I mean, you were all right then. But it was too warm down. We used to sleep on top.
Did you have a crossing the line ceremony?
Not really. No, not really. We, you know, it was, I don't know, there was nothing much to have a celebration about, you know, that day. But
must have been a great adventure for you, though.
Oh yes, oh yes,
climbs.
Yeah. And then we're in Cape Town, and we're still in the dark. And then all just we set away, and we were in the high seas, and we kept looking out. You know, we were on a warning, and there was a German radar. Had been sinking ships in the Indian Ocean, and mine. It was a fast ship, like was the Empress of Canada, that would have took some catching, and we got right across on our own, right to Bombay. The rest followed us after that. And when we got to Bombay, we went to this. We didn't stop in Bombay. I mean, when we got ashore, even march ashore. We thought everybody had the teeth out. You know, this beetle nut, what they chew, they've been spitting about all over. I said, dentist has been busy here. You know, because we didn't know nothing about beetle nut, anything like that.
At what point were you told that you were going to Bombay? Or did you know you were going to Bombay? What point?
Nearly till we were there.
How did you feel going to India? Because you would know, of course, about the Japanese invasion and what was
going on. Well, it was pretty, you know, I was thought then, like, well, I said, it's pretty obvious, no, war. So,
had you thoughts about how rough it might be, how difficult it might be? Because you were, you're trained in England, and
yeah,
now you're going into a jungle
right.
situation.
Aye, but it, I mean, for all our training, like, it was totally different to what we were going to go into, like. And when we got there, we marched through and we entrained, and then we still didn't know where we were going from there. We went to a third-class hill station, Ahmadnagar. You'll have heard the name.